Peace be with you. Friends, we find in our first reading from the book of Proverbs a fascinating image. Wisdom, God's wisdom, is compared to a woman who sits confidently in a beautiful house and has prepared a sumptuous meal. Listen now to the language from the book of Proverbs. She has dressed her meat, mixed her wine. Yes, she has spread out her table. And this hospitable woman sends her word out to the whole city to come and enjoy her meal. She's especially interested, we hear, in the poor and the simple. Listen. Let whoever is simple turn in here. To the one who lacks understanding, she says, come, eat of my food and drink of the wine I have mixed. Well, how wonderful that wisdom, God's wisdom, is compared to food that's both nutritious and delightful. Wisdom is not simply a matter of food for the mind, correct information, right insight. Rather, wisdom works its way into your bones, becomes part of your flesh. It feeds you and shapes you like a series of good meals. You know, this was a typical approach in the ancient world. There's a great scholar called Pierre Hadot, a Frenchman, who was a historian of classical philosophy. He reminded us that in ancient Greece, philosophy was not an academic discipline so much. Rather, it was a bios, life, a form of life. When someone came to Plato or Aristotle or Epicurus or one of the ancient masters to study, he was not coming so much to hear lectures from a professor. When I was studying philosophy years ago, I would attend lectures on Plato's philosophy. But that's not what Plato's own students were doing. Rather, they learned a whole mode of life. They learned an entire set of disciplines, practices, behaviors, and thoughts that determine them in a new way. Philosophy was a way of life. You know, a close analogy, I think, would be a young man or young woman joining the army. When you join the army, you're not just studying military strategy. You're being immersed in a whole form of life. Your whole bodily look is different. The way you speak, the way you move, the way you act, everything about you is now a soldier's way of being. Watch a young soldier walking through the airport. You'll notice it. You'll notice a whole difference in their carriage and manner of behavior. Or think of a young man joining the seminary today. I think something similar is going on. There's much more in the seminary than just studying abstract theology and philosophy. To become a seminarian is to be conformed to a whole new way of life, is to take a manner of life, a bios, if you will, into your muscles and bones. It's changing the whole of you. Perhaps another analogy would be the learning of a game. We might speak of a wise baseball player or a wise golfer. And we know this doesn't mean somebody who's just read a lot of books about baseball and golf. I mean, there are people like that. They've read histories of the games. They know the statistics and all that. But when we speak of someone who's a wise baseball player or a wise golfer, it's someone in whom the rhythms, demands, excellences, and challenges of the game have been imprinted in his mind, emotions, and body. A wise baseball player has this deep intuition as to what to do, what the game is demanding at this moment. Mind, body, soul, heart, emotions have been conformed to baseball. You know, a friend of mine who's a pro golfer said to me as he was trying to train my swing, which is a steady challenge, he said, you should reverence your bad shots as much as your good ones. For the bad shots telling you an awful lot about your swing. He said, think of the golf ball as like a little microchip. as you hit that ball and you watch as it flies, it tells you exactly how you were swinging. That's a wise golfer speaking, who's lived through the ups and downs, the demands and challenges of the game. A bad shot, he said, should be imprinted on your body in a negative way. Now you know what not to do. Okay. We can now begin to see how the analogy of eating is so appropriate. Authentic wisdom, God's wisdom, is meant to invade the whole of you and make you somebody new. Its consequence is a whole form of life and not just an enlightened mind. Now, with that background in mind, I'd like us to consider the wisdom offered by the Catholic Church. It's our deep conviction that God's logos, God's wisdom, was made incarnate in Jesus and continues to exist in his mystical body, the Church. The Church, therefore, is the place where this sumptuous meal is laid out for us. Let me say that again. Let that image from the book of Proverbs stay in your mind of this woman who's laying out before you this sumptuous feast. Well, the Church is usually personified as a woman. The Church is laying out for us this feast of wisdom, which is meant to shape and determine the whole of our lives. That's what's going on here, I think. Is intellectual formation part of this meal? Yes. From Irenaeus to Augustine to Thomas Aquinas to Thérèse of Lisieux to John Henry Newman, the Catholic Church lays out for us a rich fare for the mind. We are, as I've often said, a thinking faith. St. Anselm defined theology as fides querens intellectum, faith that seeks understanding. So yes, we are an intellectual tradition. There's food for the mind laid out in the Catholic Church. But it's so much more than that. The Catholic Church is a great bios, a great life form, meant to influence every aspect of you. It's made up of sacraments, liturgy, art, architecture, the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, the example of the saints, a distinctive vocabulary and manner of speech, a set of characteristic moves and gestures. This is the feast of wisdom that's meant to stick to your bones. I'm just back from one of our trips filming for my Catholicism project, this 10-part documentary that I'm doing. We're just back from Spain and Lourdes. In Spain, we visited Avila, the hometown of St. Teresa. We also went to Segovia and Toledo, two cities associated with St. John of the Cross. So we studied two of the really great mystics of our tradition. What we tried to do, though, was to catch more than their mind. We tried to catch their spirit, their style, their place. I stood on the medieval ramparts of the city of Avila. St. Teresa would have known them well. They're castellated, like the walls of many medieval towns. This one, though, has survived. And you see immediately why St. Teresa referred to the interior castle. That's that place where Christ is dwelling in her, that gave her peace, security, power. My point is, the wisdom of St. Teresa was incarnate in the very place where she lived. She took it in. Every time she looked at that wall, every time the power of that wall worked its way into her imagination. We then went to Lourdes, wonderful Lourdes, with all of its overtones and undertones. Is there something intellectual about Lourdes? Sure, you could analyze what happened there. You could speculate about it. But Lourdes appeals, doesn't it, to the body and to the emotions, to the whole texture of the self. That's the Catholic thing. At the heart of all this is the sacred food that we call the Eucharist. Now, again, go back to that master image I've been using of the woman who lays out the rich fare. This is why we're reading our passage from the book of Proverbs in connection with our powerful passage from the sixth chapter of John. Jesus says, "Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you." The Eucharist is at the very heart of this fare of wisdom, the way the church feeds us. Now, permit me, if you will, a kind of cri de cœur, as the French say, a cry from the heart. A deep concern of mine is that the integral Catholic culture, this variegated complex of influences and practices and ideas, largely fell apart after Vatican II. Now, again, I'm not in any way blaming Vatican II. Vatican II is filled with this sensibility. Vatican II is filled with everything I've been talking about. But for all kinds of reasons, mostly cultural, this integrated Catholic thing, integrated Catholic culture, fell apart. We became so enamored of the notion of reaching out to the modern world that we tended to lose a sense of our own distinctiveness. Do Catholics look, sound, talk, move, and think differently than the average run of Americans? Or have we succumbed to the temptation to fit in so that we no longer know clearly who we are? And have we allowed the central food of our wisdom tradition to fade to black? 75% of Catholics regularly stay away from the Eucharist, which is at the center of the banquet laid out by the Word of God. Again, that's a tragedy. Vatican II wanted to revive a sense of the Eucharist. It wanted to bring more people back to Mass, to participate more fully in it. The fact that 75% of us stay away from it, that means, listen, we're staying away from the banquet laid out by the wisdom of God. See something almost plaintive now in that image from Proverbs. She calls out, drawing people into this meal. Are we coming? Mind you, this is not just nostalgic conservatism that I'm advocating here. I have absolutely no personal memories of the preconciliar church. As I say, it's not a blaming of Vatican II in any way. It's a cry of the heart, calling us back to this rich sense of a textured and variegated Catholic culture. A sumptuous meal of God's wisdom that we are meant to enjoy. We are meant fully to participate in. It's a call for this renewal of the form of life which is Catholicism. And that, friends, is the wisdom that can feed us. God bless you.